Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Our next guest grew up in one of America's most violent cities. His father left home when he was 5. His mum died of cancer at the age of 9, and that left him an orphan. But he now leads an organisation that promotes functional families right around the globe. In fact, it's an organisation you've probably well heard of, Focus on the Family. His name is Jim Daly. He's the CEO. Jim, welcome to Open House.
It's great to be with you, Sheridan. Thanks for having me.
It really is a remarkable thing, the way somebody from your background then turns around to start leading an organization that touches families around the world. We'll talk about that as we proceed the next few moments too. Of course, many people have heard of James Dobson, whose shoes you have filled with Focus on the Family. I guess those would have been big shoes to fill.
I'm not sure people or a person would really fill the shoes there, but, you know, it is an irony. And Dr. Dobson and I talk about that every so often. And, you know, I just think it's where most of the culture lives today is with brokenness and broken families. And I just think it's like the Lord to pull me into this discussion. I like it. I enjoy it. I like seeing marriages restored and families put back together.
I bet you do, especially when you've tasted the brokenness, as you say.
Oh, absolutely. I just heard a story today. I was talking to someone who works with me here. They've taken 2 children in from the foster care system just temporarily, and they had a visitation with their mom last night, the natural birth mom, and she didn't show up. And I wept because I know that feeling of that 5-6-year-old who feels totally disconnected from a parent and that the parent has no emotion for them, or at least that's what you sense. That there's no feeling or appreciation for you as a child. And I've just cried because I know that feeling.
You grew up in Compton, an L.A. suburb, which Wikipedia talks about as, I quote, the most dangerous inner city in a suburban area across the United States due to its high level of poverty and very high violent crime rate, especially for murders found in the city. Whoa. Now, let's talk about your background, the background of the boy. What effect did a city like that have on you as a child?
You know, it was tough. It's a racially mixed area of Hispanic, African American, and white kids at the time I was there, and I think it was gang ridden, and I was in 3rd and 4th grade, and it was tough. I remember running home many days with much older boys chasing me just to beat me up. And, you know, they never caught me. Fortunately, I was pretty quick as a kid.
Thankfully.
But, you know, it does, it's a sad tragedy. And that's cities around the world, I know, experience that kind of, you know, just real tough upbringing where people are treating each other with such disrespect that life is not appreciated and taken very much for granted. So I know right from the roots, right from growing up in that kind of environment, how little some people have for the respect for life. And we saw that. I had one man that was murdered right outside my bedroom window, shot with a shotgun. And, you know, it's quite an amazing thing to see that scene as a little 8-year-old boy.
What did it do to you? What did that experience actually do and shape? How did it shape you in the years to come?
You know, I think that along with just what was happening in my family with my mom and dad, just seeing how people let you down. And I know it was one of the criticisms of the book, actually, when I wrote about that. I said, one thing that's important is to keep your expectations low when it comes to people. Now, it doesn't mean you don't have expectations or you don't have hope when people are interacting with you, but it's just to keep them reasonable. Because I think people build up such expectations, even with our spouses and with those around us, what they're going to do, how they're going to act, and how they're going to help us achieve something, that when they let you down, it can really become a huge disappointment. And I think what I learned early on as a child is that you can't put your trust in this situation, in people around you. It's not where your trust can be, because people will either intentionally or unintentionally let you down.
Yeah, well, you talk about the book and the story you've written up. Your memoirs is called Finding Home, An Imperfect Path to Faith and Family. And you mentioned there about the parental situation. Your birth father walked out on the family at a very young age. Well, you were, what, all of 5, weren't you?
Correct. I have there's 5 kids in the family. I'm the youngest by 6 years. And so when I was 5 years old, my dad, he just could not overcome issues of alcoholism and gambling, and it just destroyed our family. And my mom finally said enough is enough, and she took 5 kids and, and left and became a single parent mom trying to raise us and, you know, feed us. She worked two or three jobs at a time to take care of us. And, you know, I think that, again, was just the first of the many broken promises that my father made. The irony of that is I think when a person experiences that, you can either choose to be bitter about it or you can learn from those mistakes. I was talking earlier today with a friend who's been let down by his dad, and you know, the bottom line is you can either repeat those mistakes or you can improve. And I think what's important is to know with my own kids that I want to keep my promises, that I don't want to break promises, and I want to let them know I love them. And I try to do that every day. And that in essence, is the lesson my father indirectly taught me.
Because in the book, you talk about the pain that you felt when your father promised to give you a baseball mitt, but he never followed through on that.
Oh, it crushed me. I can remember, and you know, I think there's some biochemical response they talk about with your memory, where your brain sears these memories into your consciousness. And I can remember what I was wearing the day. It was my 7th birthday, and he had promised to bring me a baseball mitt. Now, they'd been separated, divorced for 2 years, but he said he was going to stop by, bring me my first real baseball glove. And I was so excited, I told neighbors, my friends, you know, my dad's bringing me a glove. And Ricky Hernandez, who lived next door, he and I went out to the curb every 15 minutes, and I'd look down one end of the road and look the other direction.
Oh, Jim.
And he just never showed up. Oh. And I, you know, one was just the embarrassment. Ricky finally kind of hit me in the shoulder and said, Jim, I'm sure he'll show up sometime. And he just never came. Yeah. And I think that was probably one of the deepest wounds. It seems simple, but I'm sure there's a lot of people in your audience, particularly men. When I'm talking with men, I'll ask them, do you have a wound by your dad? Did your dad do something that utterly let you down? And I mean, almost 100% of the time, every hand in the room will go up.
Yeah.
And the fathers have incredible influence with their children, and I think we overlook that as dads. They're looking at every move we make, and they're looking to see if we're keeping our promises. And when it doesn't happen, it does more to us than I think we realize.
Mm. Jim Daly is our guest on Open House, the CEO of Focus on the Family and the author of these memoirs of his, Finding Home, it's called. Theopenhouse.net.au has the podcast too. So Jim, then a few years after this experience, you lose your mum to cancer. Then your stepfather actually leaves and splits. There must have been a sense of absolute rejection for this little boy.
That was a dark, I mean, I can remember the emotions of that. My mom did have cancer. My stepfather was so in love with her in one way that he didn't want to share her with the kids, so he would lock her away in the bedroom and would tell us with a very stern voice not to interrupt her, not to spend time with her because it would drain her energy. So he literally would lock her back in the bedroom. We couldn't see her. I would go weeks without seeing my own mom in the house.
Hmm.
And I can remember one day she called me into the bedroom and Hank was gone. The first thought I had was, I wonder where Hank, my stepdad, was at. And she called me back to the room and said, Jimmy, I'd like you to go down and buy some flower seeds and plant them for me. Now, I didn't know what was happening. I thought she was just tired or maybe had a bad flu. Nobody took me into the confidence to let me know what was really wrong with my mother, which I would encourage any parent that has a young child to let them know where things are at, not to hold back, because it was devastating when I was called into her bedroom by my oldest brother the day she died, and he simply said, Mom's gone.
Mm.
It came out of nowhere. Yet on the day of the funeral, we got home, and Hank had left. He came out with his bags packed and said, I can't take the pressure. I'm leaving, moving back to San Francisco. And he just got into a cab that we didn't even notice was waiting for him on the curb. And as he drove away, we pressed our faces against the window and just thought, what are we going to do? And in that moment, I remember the flower seeds I'd planted 6 weeks before, and I ran out to my mom's flower box, and there the little shoots were coming up. And it was an incredible message that she had the forethought to send my direction to say that, you know, things will grow, things will continue. I understood it. I caught it as a lesson as a little child. And, you know, we continued to struggle through all of that. And Hank's departure, I never spoke a word to him again to this day. I don't know what's ever happened to him, and I don't think he really cared what happened to us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that I think the feelings and the emotions of that, in many ways, I felt God, and we weren't a religious family at all, but I felt like someone was looking out for me, even in the midst of that. I had a deep sense that other kids were in far greater trouble than I was, and at least I had two older brothers and two older sisters that loved me. And I think that made a huge difference.
Yes. Jim, the kind of background that you've just described, you know, the tough city, the loss of the parents, the stepfather walking out, that could actually be the story of so many people who end up in many ways to be those people we would say struggle to fit into society. They might be the ones who actually are the, you know, the cause of so much crime because they're struggling themselves to actually adjust. There was a turning point for you. What was that turning point? Because obviously you've gotten to where you are now and there's been some sort of major event that's helped you get there.
Well, you know, for me, one of the things, I think, given all the difficulty going on in my home life, I think I really got into school. I enjoyed it. I was challenged by it. I like to apply myself in that way in sports. And so playing American football, I played quarterback, and I think I derived quite a bit of self-esteem from that. And through that, I ended up going to what we have here, a Fellowship of Christian Athletes. It's a group that mm-hmm. brings professional athletes together. And through that experience and through the influence of my mother, she wasn't a religious person, but the day before she died, she made a commitment to Christ. She said, "I'm not good enough." She was a wonderful person. She did many things well. She had a great sense of humor, and she took care of people around her. And I think on any score, she would have, you know, if you were able to attain something in heaven, she would have been there. But, you know, she came to the realization that, you know, the Bible might be true, and what the New Testament talks about, a relationship with Jesus Christ, might be true. And she did that just within hours before she took her last breath.
And how did you find out about that, since you didn't see her? Did she tell you about that before that fateful day?
Well, you know, again, I think God does have a sense of humor. That's one thing I believe in. And our neighbors, their last name were the Hopes, H-O-P-E, and the Hopes had gone to that hospital room and talked to my mother about what it meant to be a Christian and what the New Testament in the Bible talks about and forgiveness for things that we do. And I think in all of that, she came to the conclusion. And the Hope family told us later that day after she passed away. They got us together. They came to our house, and they told us about what our mom had done. And that, I think, set the family in a very concrete direction. All five of the kids now are Christians, living reasonably healthy lives, not perfect, not by any means.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's almost like God reached down to this little family with all this going on and said, "I'm going to look after you." And I can't tell you why, other than we're willing. We're willing to say, we believe.
Mm. Another thing in the book, you say one of the most liberating realizations that you had was that you weren't responsible for the actions of your parents. Tell me about that.
Well, I think a lot of that's what concerns me with a lot of the divorce that we have, at least in this country today. A lot of the kids carry the burden of that. They feel it's their fault, that they're the reason to blame for their parents' divorce or the reason for the friction in the home. And I think again, at an early age, I realized that, you know what, I really don't have a lot to do with that. That's something between them. It's something they have to bear the burden for. And I just feel when I'm talking to young people, I try to express that to make sure that they don't inadvertently carry that guilt, because there's enough to deal with as a child, and I don't think that's something that's either healthy or appropriate for a child to carry.
Mm.
And I just realized that early on. And the people around me, I mean, I felt generally as a pretty good kid. I certainly got my nose into some bad stuff here and there. But, you know, I felt like I knew right from wrong, and I knew how to move forward in this life, but certainly not owning other people's poor decisions, whether that was drinking or gambling or having an affair, all the things that can take place. I knew that wasn't my fault.
Yeah. Good lessons. This is Open House. Jim Daly is with us, CEO of Focus on the Family and author of Finding Home, An Imperfect Path to Faith and Family. It's a memoir. Theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. You know, Jim, we mentioned before the irony of the fact that you've had this kind of background and yet now you're leading an organization like Focus on the Family that is indeed committed to strengthening families right around the world. I think of Wes Stafford, who's the international CEO of Compassion as well. And he's got a similar background. He grew up as a West African missionary kid. He was abused in a mission-run home, had all sorts of horrific things done to him. And then the fact is that he turns around now and becomes the leader of an organization that's sponsoring literally a million children around the world out of poverty. What does it say to you about God? The fact that you can have that kind of background and then, I guess, wind up where you are now.
You know, this is what it says to me about God. A, that God has an incredible heart. And, you know, there's in the Psalms, the book of Psalms, which is right in there between the New Testament and the Old Testament, David and other contributors to Psalms. They write, "The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." And I think Wes Stafford, Jim Daly, others who come with those kind of tragic circumstances, I think the Lord can use them. I think he's looking for those who are broken, because in that, there's a certain amount of pride that is cut loose. I mean, you can't hang on to a lot of pride when you're in situations like that, whether it's poverty or just the obliteration of your family. It's hard to be full of pride about those things. And I think in that crushing, and that's one thing I'm worried about in the Western culture, because we're avoiding pain at all costs. Mm. But I think in life, when pain and suffering comes, there's a certain sobering effect about our time here on earth, what it's about, the big picture. I think people get a better understanding when they are crushed in spirit. And I think that's the kind of person the Lord is looking for, to say, "I'm here to help you." And, you know, a lot of people will say, "Yeah, don't you see religion is a crutch?" You know what? I can tell you, I was down. I was way down. And all I can say is that I feel like God lifted me up. It wasn't me. It wasn't my talent. It wasn't my ability. It was embracing the values of what Jesus is talking about. Treating people well, having a good, healthy perspective on your own heart, knowing your weaknesses, you know, applying the golden rule, just being generally a good person and treating people in a way that you want to be treated. Mm. I think all those things help you in this life, and I would encourage anybody that has questions about it just to read it. I remember when I was a 15, 16-year-old, it dawned on me that I might go through this entire life and never read the most important book that is sitting there. Mm. I would read books on astronomy, books on playing football, other books, and it hit me, even as a teenager, I better read that book. And as I began to read it, man, it made sense to me. Yeah. I saw myself in there as not a good person, and it helped me come to terms with, what if God does exist? What if this is true? And it set me on an incredible journey to discover that.
Jim, I reckon your story can speak to two particular groups of people that I've just got in my mind. One is the person who's actually gone through your kind of background, your kind of experience, early tough times, broken families, etc., abandonment, all of those kinds of issues. I'm just wondering whether you could speak to those kind of people. And also those mothers and fathers who've actually got, they're struggling alone because they also have had a spouse that's maybe, I guess, left them in the lurch with the children. They're kind of thinking, man, how am I going to do this? Can you address both of those groups and just a couple of points of guidance that you could give to both of those from your experience and also from your expertise?
You know, I'm embarrassed on the first part of that I didn't really think of teenagers when I wrote the book, and I've been really happy with the number of kids that have called or written me emails, sometimes in incredibly tragic circumstances. And again, I'm just thankful that the book's been able to bring some hope to them. I can remember one woman called me and said, you know, when I was a teenager, my parents kept me in a closet and would throw food to me. Hmm. I just can't imagine that. I remember a 15-year-old boy sent me a note and read the book, and he said, you know, my dad just yesterday came and talked to my mom and I and said that they were getting a divorce and that he disowned me as my father. Hmm. I mean, those are crushing words to hear. And so for me to have particularly teenagers read the book and feel that there is some hope in this world that is beyond them, and that is a unexpected pleasure and joy for me. Yeah. On the older side, with mothers particularly, when I'm talking about those experiences, when I stand in front of a group and when it's all over, so many moms will come up just with tears in their eyes and tell me about the loss of their son that has gone a different direction. They've lost contact with him, and how they were too rigid with that child, or not loving enough, and how they regret that, or the divorce that they've gone through. It's really those moms, those wives that have come up to say, you know, that it does give me hope. I know that my circumstances can be better. I don't want to live in my circumstances. I want to live above my circumstances. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly what God offers.
And so what kind of advice would you give to both of those groups, though, about finding hope? It can be an elusive thing sometimes in terms of the emotional quality of that experience of hope.
It's probably the most difficult question, because on the one hand, I felt like somehow God protected my heart. He did not allow me to get bitter. Something within me, I was able to counter that potential bitterness and that regret, and that was just never there. And I think what I've learned over time is that, you know, each day we have to simply live for the day, and as Christians particularly, we've got to trust that God will be there and take care of our needs. And that sometimes is tough. It doesn't depend upon our circumstances. It's not about being happy. It's about being consistent, being faithful, being joyful. And I think that is the secret of living a good life.
Well, Jim, great to talk to you, and thanks for your time, and more power to you with all the work that you're doing through Focus on the Family.
Sheridan, thanks so much, and hello to all your listeners. I love Australia. I've been able to travel there about 20 times, and I just think you have a wonderful country, and we wish you all the best as well.
Yeah, good on you. Good to talk to you. That's President and CEO of Focus on the Family, Jim Daly. His memoir is called Finding Home, An Imperfect Path to Faith and Family.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.